A scathing new audit says the city has lost hundreds of millions in a badly managed pension fund. The feds tell the owners of a local Section 8 complex to clean up or get out. And Google Fiber may lay down high-speed internet right here in town. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. And now subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. And then later, the rich history of Jacksonville's Friday Musicale on this Friday. Plus, you won't want to miss it as travel expert Judy Wells has some hot travel auction items for you. All of that ahead, but first, it's Friday, and that means it's time for our weekly roundtable. Here today, Fred Matthews, who writes for The Examiner, joining us this morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union, good to see you.
Good morning, everybody.
Claire Goforth, writer at Portfolio Weekly with us.
Good morning.
And WJCT's own analyst, John Burr.
Hey, great to be here.
Great to have all of you here and plenty of news from the week to discuss, from more fallout at the troubled Eureka Garden Complex to Google Fiber eyeing Jacksonville for super high-speed internet access and more. We're going to talk about all of it, but first this morning, a closer look at the audit looking into the city of Jacksonville's pension problems. Now, a scathing investigative report accuses the Jacksonville Police and Fire Pension Fund of mismanaging the fund and making poor investments that have potentially cost taxpayers in the hundreds of millions. We're going to take a closer look as we take your calls at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union, let's begin with you. The Times Union uncovering this. And it paints a grim picture of the $1.39 billion investment fund over the last quarter century.
It really does. Basically, in a nutshell, the investigative report kind of cast a picture of the Police and Fire Pension Fund as being a financially wasteful agency that has not done a good job on one of its core missions, which is investing its portfolio so that there will be money available to pay for the pension promises the city has made to retired firefighters and police.
Fred Matthews, some city council members have called upon the legislature and the governor to not only spark state and federal investigations, but also to change the law so that the local pension fund is no longer an independent body, but that so that city officials have more direct oversight over the pension fund. What do you think about that?
I think it's an interesting call to arms, and given the fact that the auditor apparently has some federal ties, I think he mentioned the words like FBI and SEC. But, you know, and I think all of those things may happen in time. But we're still even with this audit, and granted, the members of the commission, the pension board, seem to be a bit blindsided by it. I understand that former Sheriff Nat Glover resigned the other day from it, and taking his seat is Bill Shy, who, interestingly enough, was on the commission that put together a plan for the city to pay back the money. But amidst all of this, does it mean that the city is still not going to pay their share of the pension fund? Or is this an opportunity for them to take it over and not have to pay their share of the pension fund? The basic question is still there, but this particular activity seems to say, well, we won't have to pay anything because these guys are incompetent.
549-2937 to join the show. At the same time, let's talk about Edward Seidel, the author of the report, a Forbes columnist and former attorney for the SEC. As one listener's pointed out to me, he mixed it up with the state treasurer in Rhode Island recently when he issued a scathing report about that state's pension fund. State Treasurer Gina Raimondo in Rhode Island called financial industry critic Edward Ted Seidel nothing but a political attack dog paid for by opponents of pension reform, basically saying that he has a preset agenda to be critical of public pensions. Claire Goforth.
You know, that's an interesting point, but if
it was merely his agenda to be critical of pensions, then people wouldn't have been saying for years and years that there are serious issues with our pension fund. I think that Fred raises an interesting point about the city's liability on this pension fund and the hundreds of millions of dollars that we'll be paying in years to come. I just don't think that politically we can put ourselves in a position where we stop paying police, retired police and firemen and women their pension that they've been promised by the city.
Rhode Island? I mean, do you know how corrupt Rhode Island is?
Exactly. And that's not a state that's known for, always been known for financial transparency, perfect financial management. So this is a murky picture all the way around. John Burr, how do you see the pension fund responding? As yet, they've made no comment.
Yeah, and I think they're going to keep their mouth shut. What are they going to say that could possibly sway any opinions? You know, we're getting past the opinion stage here. I'm kind of wondering why, some ambitious U.S. attorneys in Florida isn't going to, pick this up and run with it and it looks like a beautiful feather in a cap for a prosecutor, even Angela Corey. Why doesn't she, go after these guys with an investigation?
David. That's a good question.
Well, it is. I just want to circle back, though, on the question that Fred raised in terms of the liability. The city is still liable completely to pay the pension. This doesn't get them off the hook for any of the unfunded liability they have to pay. It basically, the argument is that taxpayers would not have to pay as much if the investments had been better by the pension fund, but they're still liable by every letter of the law to pay the full amount that's due. As far as the prosecution goes, I think that a prosecutor might want to get more information as well from the pension fund's response. I do think they're going to have a response to this. They did get the report Wednesday afternoon. I'd be surprised if they don't have something to say when they meet with the city to counter or rebut, make their case in regard to all these findings and charges that have been leveled against them.
Fred.
Well, they can't have now a more able person to read this report than Bill Shai, who sits now on the board, to read this report and give a responsive answer to it. And you can't have someone more respectable than he to do this for them. Look, if someone's doing an audit on my nonprofit, I'm usually going to know about the audit ahead of time and have some input into it. The board clearly was not involved in this audit. This was something that was started from the city council's end of the deal for whatever reasons they have. And again, it still comes down to the same thing. Okay, you've got the audit. It looks bad. All of that. When are you guys going to put up your share of the money to make this thing whole? And what this audit essentially does is it delays that process. It delays talk of that process. It begins a cloud over the entire process that nothing gets done. The mayor can sit back still and wait until the city council decides that they've heard enough on the audit before any action is taken place.
Well, and then if an investigation does start, the city can use that as an excuse to delay further, So I think you got something there, Fred.
But with the city's credit rating getting downgraded because of this liability, we're getting to a point where we have to stop talking about it and we have to really start coming up with solutions.
Let's go to your calls. 549-2937 to join the show. Teresa in Mandarin. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Excuse me. I just wanted to say my husband has been a firefighter for 27 years. He served Jacksonville. He just retired a couple of years ago. And I just want to, I know you guys are talking about this and all these intricate details, but I really want the citizens to know that, my husband never, ever, he will not get Social Security unless he gets a new job now. So he never will get the Social Security he has paid into. They pulled money out of his check to put it into for his pension. That's his 401k. So I just want to make it clear in very plain terms, because you guys are talking about a lot of things and complicating things, I want the citizens to know of Jacksonville that these firemen and police do not get Social Security unless after they retire they get another job. And they're usually in their 40s and their 50s. So then, also remember, this is their 401k. And then remember that the city has pulled money out of that pension over and over and over again because they have invested their money well enough that it's got a like a 7% return. So what I'm trying to say is let the citizens know, even with all you guys talking, that no Social Security, this is their 401k. Why are they not allowed to have their 401k? And then think about all the people that, and I have to say about, you know, God forbid the Florida Times Union ever actually report that the city has borrowed so much money from the pension fund. And now, and they've been on pension holidays for over 20 years. Are you kidding me? Can we just focus on that over and over again instead of focusing on how much money our police and firemen are costing the city? That is the bottom line. It is the city has borrowed tons of money, and now the pension holidays are over. They are absolutely not wanting to, and now they're putting it all out there like, oh, they're costing citizens tons of money and taxpayers. And it's just ridiculous. So yeah. I wish you guys could focus more on that.
Thank you, Teresa. Thank you. That's Teresa in Mandarin. David.
Well, the city paid every year whatever the pension fund told them the city had to pay. So I know there's been a lot of debate about whether there were pension holidays or not. The reality is that there were.
That's not up for debate. There were.
It is debatable. I mean,
why? Why is it debatable?
Because a pension holiday would be where the pension fund says you have to put in this much money and they don't put in that much money. Every year, the pension fund said, here's what you have to pay us, and the city paid it. So now the argument is that they didn't pay as much back then as they are now is absolutely true. But you know, the city is paying $153 million this year. They're spending a lot of money on that pension fund.
What about her larger point, though, that in her view, the rank and file are paying the price for bad decisions that people higher up the chain have made? And let me also read to you an email that I got from a listener. Public pensions lost an average of 25% of their value during the market crash. They were sold stock-based pensions. To avert this in the future, pensions diversified, started buying a percentage of non-stock-based investment vehicles, safer than stock products, and they carry a higher fee. This diversification out of risky stock-based funds is considered best practice post-crash. But the auditor is from Wall Street and was with the SEC, so he won't like any diversification out of stock-based funds. The way I see it, he's more of a paid fund advisor than an independent fund auditor. Google him. He has an agenda and a preconceived notion of pensions. I don't know if he's right or wrong, but he's certainly biased, not independent. In fact, he calls himself a pension proctologist. It is as if he has a canned report ready for every pension audit. Fees are too high, need more transparency, et cetera.
Well, I think that from the perspective of somebody who you're a beneficiary of the pension plan, you're a taxpayer supporting it, you do want somebody who's going to come in and look and see, are the people who are profiting off this pension fund charging excessive amounts of fees? I mean, that's to everyone's interest to know whether that's the case.
Absolutely. Fred, John.
But all of this activity could have taken place a year and a half ago. The same people on the city council who spurred this audit are the same people who were in place 2 years ago or actually 3 years ago when this whole discussion began. Every mayor prior to this has admitted that they didn't pay. Yeah, they paid something on the pension fund. They had to. But they didn't pay what they were required to pay on the pension fund, and that's part of the reason
is your referral to the alleged pension holiday.
The pension holiday. They didn't really have a holiday. I mean, they just didn't pay the money that they were required to pay. And when the stock market crashed in 2008, 2009, it became a reality check to our pension fund, to pension funds all over the country, that they could no longer depend on that. They had to take new priorities.
Cliff on the west side. Go ahead, Cliff.
Hey, I work in the private sector, and my pension is with the Teamsters. It's funny how when the pension is funded by the taxpayers, it seems like there's not any question that the taxpayers will make up the difference. Our pensions are going to be cut benefit-wise by 40% over what retirees who have already retired have been receiving because of the shortfalls due to what the union is calling the investment shortfalls. It's just a little frustrating working for a non-government entity that you know, hours are going to be reduced, no questions asked. But the public sectors, you know, they have the pockets of the taxpayers to make up the difference. There's definitely something unfair about the fact that the public employees can't have the same kind of thing happen to them that's happening to the private sector employees.
John Burr.
You know, the whole question of diversification of investments, look, it's always been a standard procedure to diversify investment portfolios with large pension funds. I mean, they should be conservatively run. If the Jacksonville pension fund was heavily invested in stocks before the crash, that was a speculative move. They shouldn't have been that heavily invested. They should have been diversified before the crash. Then they wouldn't have suffered so much. You know, I don't know the details here, but it seems to me, you know, for somebody to say, well, you know, diversification is like this new strategy that's going to work out. Well, that's been the strategy of investment managers for, you know, hundreds of years.
Claire.
But, you know, one of the points that the auditor made that I think we need to talk about is the fact that John Keane really has no expertise in this area. And then here he is managing this $100 million fund with literally no accountability. I mean, the board seems to have just been completely complacent for who knows how long.
David, the Times Union's reporting reflected that basically a rubber stamp.
In terms of the board's review of what went on? Yeah, I mean, obviously the people who serve on the board are not experts in the field. They rely heavily on the investment managers to provide those kind of decision-making. Now, they are going to bring in an investment advisory committee. That was one of the changes, this pension reform deal. So you would have people making with expertise in that area sitting at the table as well, making recommendations.
Fred.
Well, again, these are all arguments that weren't very important 20 years ago, 30 years ago when this was in place and everybody was in agreement and unions were in the favor with the government and everybody basically worked together. But once things changed about 20 years ago with the party changing here in the state and in the county, unions fell out of favor. And this is one byproduct of that activity, whether we like it or not. Unions fell out of favor. The legislature is the one who approved this independence of the pension funds. It's not unusual to have public pension funds to be in difference to private pension funds, but they can fail. Ask Detroit what happened to them when they went bankrupt and how many of those police and firemen lost their pension and had to go elsewhere. So it's not unusual, but we are living in a different political climate. This audit and the actions are simply a byproduct of that climate, but it still doesn't get around when is the city going to pay its part of the fund to make this whole.
Let's go to Dave along I-95. Hi, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a native Rhode Islander. I was listening to your panel earlier talking about how you were talking about the corruption in Rhode Island, and I'm thinking to myself, you can't be serious. This is Florida. This is a state that has a Republican Party that has done everything it possibly can to just stay in power. Oh, come on. You can't be serious. You want to compare corruption in the state of Rhode Island versus the state of Florida? There is no comparison. Florida is up there, it's the step of legends when it comes to corruption. So please, don't compare my home state with this.
Oh, come on.
Touche, Dave. Thank you.
Give me a break.
Angela in Mandarin. Go ahead, Angela.
Hey, this is Angela. I'd like to know why John Keane is leaving with close to $500,000 package if this fund is being run so poorly.
Thank you, Angela.
I look at all the young adults in Riverside that are barely scraping by, and it saddens me to think that they're going to have to work the rest of their lives. After 25 years in nursing, I won't receive nearly as much as most of these officers are receiving their pension packages.
Thank you, Angela. And the outrage over all of this, I think, is widespread. But David, in particular, there seems to be a lot of anger over Keene's golden parachute, so to speak?
Well, the short answer to the question is he's getting all that money because his contract says he can get all that money. So they negotiated a contract with him that gives him extremely lucrative pay, lucrative use of unused vacation days. So it's within the contract.
You know, negotiate seems a strong term for just here you go.
I doubt we'll see that type of generous package given again.
If we look ahead, you know, we have a criminal investigation here and they substantiate the findings of this audit, John Keane's not going to get to keep all that money. John Keane might not be a free citizen. You know, this is serious stuff here.
Speaking of serious stuff, let's move on and talk about some other headlines from the week. The fallout continues at the troubled Section 8 Eureka Garden complex on the city's west side. Federal housing officials are demanding that owner Global Ministries correct hundreds of violations at the apartments, some of which are life-threatening. They've got 30 days or the apartments will lose federal funding. Now, the other day, CEO, the Reverend Richard Hamlet, appeared on this program, and he said he's committed to fixing the problems. Fred Matthews, do you take him at his word?
He's committed now to fixing it, but it may be too late. If these if the deadlines that are being set by the regional and district HUD folks are to hold, there's no way he's going to fix those steps by then. There's no way he's going to clean out the mold by then. There's no way he's going to replace the air conditioning units that are literally falling out of the windows up there by then. I mean, let's face it. If he was manager of the apartment complex, the one that says you'd be home by now when you drive across the St. John's, the Matthews Bridge there on the right. If he was manager of that apartment complex, do you think that he would still be owner or the people there would still stay there if they had no other choice? I mean, that's what this is looking at here. And in conversations with other of the housing projects folks that have owned projects like this that are privately owned, believe me, they're all checking their stairwells and air conditioning units to make sure that they aren't next on the hit list.
And what about the other properties that they own, such as Moncrief Village and Washington Heights, which also have huge problems with crime? And I would be really not surprised at all if there were maintenance issues. I mean, the problem with Eureka Gardens is so much broader than just maintenance. That place has been a hotspot for criminal activity and violent crime for many, many years, decades, going back to the 70s.
Right. And what about Hamlet's argument, David and John, that they took over the property 2.5-3 years ago, that it's difficult to fix these problems because of crime and issues that they're dealing with, that they're doing their best. That's not flying clearly with the government or the public.
My response to that was they should have done better due diligence before they bought the property. I mean, that property, everybody in Jacksonville knows that property's been a mess for decades. You know, for them to like say, oh my goodness, this all happened before we got, that's pretty disingenuous. And they haven't been very aggressive since they've been here for 3 years in trying to clean up the place. Not until, you know, people start calling them to question about it.
And that management company, LEDEC, that they have running the property, which he says he's not going to remove, has a history of not paying their vendors' bills, which makes it more difficult to get maintenance performed.
Yeah, I think one thing, too, is that Reverend Hamlet, he made a similar apology tour when there were concerns raised about an apartment complex in Tennessee. And so I think this time city officials are really recognizing that, yeah, we hear the apology, but we really are insistent that there's going to be some action.
Right.
And certainly to the extent that he's saying he can make all these fixes now within the parameters of whatever revenue he's making suggests he could have made them a year or 2 years ago.
I think with HUD saying now that, hey, look, you got a deadline here, and if you don't make it, we're going to cut your federal funding. That's the type of thing that this guy's going to understand.
Sure.
Because that's the money in the bank.
Well, the other day when he was here, I asked him, you know, do you anticipate losing your arrangement with HUD, and he said absolutely not. Well, now he's got a 30-day deadline. At the same time, Fred, it was extraordinary to listen to the callers calling into this program, lambasting this gentleman, people of strong faith just vilifying this man for running a faith-based nonprofit and at the same time, in their view, running a property where people who are stuck in Section 8 housing and really don't have other housing options, you know, are living in absolutely deplorable conditions. It really has outraged the faith community in this city, it seems.
Well, I mean, and it should, because, I mean, you have someone that's basically standing behind the cross to make profit. When you look at the kind of money, the salary that he's taken from this, when you look at the two members on his board, I think there's only two other persons on the board. They're both called deacons, but both, all of them have clear financial backgrounds in this. This was clearly an opportunity that was seen to move into an area of housing that, that you know, you get the money automatically. You know, you take care of it for a period of time. And as long as nobody says anything, you can pretty much get away with it. And that's what has happened here. This is not unusual. If you walk over to Washington Heights, which is just about half a mile from my home, and walk down Moncrief Road, you can see for yourself. You don't have to go in there and see what it is. The owners simply don't care. They put in managers who don't care and get underpaid, and all of it, one hand washes the other throughout this process. The crime, all of that goes together, and it just makes for a big mess. This guy just simply got caught.
Maria in Putnam County. Maria, good morning. How are things your way? Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. It sounds like a situation we had in Putnam County with a Section 8 apartment complex. And we have to tell you, there's some really underhanded things done. And it was strategy as well. You know, we have an issue that connects to this issue. It's called the New World Globalization, how the world market was supposed to enrich the poor all over the world, but it has not done that. It has threatened democracy. It has filled the pockets of special interest, government, and then the issue of Section 8 or disabled or low income, those systems, child and family, Social Security, those systems are always robbed first. And I can tell you, I am a disabled American. The government disabled me. I live on $830 a month. The state of Florida spends $32,000 for one prisoner. Something's got to change. Who's going to fight back? Child and family, disabled people, seniors? I tell you, living in a house that's got mildew or a creepy landlord, it's still better than being homeless. The government coming in, local government, county government, with their ordinances about nobody can fix a roof, you've got to have a permit now. Well, you know, think about what that does. It keeps family members from going and fixing their mom's roof for free. We're low income. Leave us alone. We're in business. We're small business. You know, that dollar transaction fee small business people should have been exempt from that. Do you know how many small business
Maria.
Owners in America were put out? So you get my point.
Yes, I absolutely
and it's
do.
All corruption. And anybody living in Rhode Island would say about Florida, do you know how corrupt it is in Florida? Mm-hmm. I do. Do you? Mm.
Thanks, Maria. Thanks for the call. That's Maria in Putnam County calling. Claire.
You know, I wonder if, I mean, what do we think morally about someone like Global Life making all this money off, you know, enriching themselves off providing affordable housing for people? I just feel like that ethically there's something wrong with that.
Well, there is, but the problem is that they knew that they could do this. Because unless these residents, and thank our article in Folio pointed it out, the nurse, the retired nurse who's helped these residents to lead this fight, if it had not been for them continuing to challenge the management on site to bring this to the government, no one would still have cared about what's taking place here. And the system knows this. You can't tell me that the local HUD office didn't know what was going on there. They contracted out someone to do their job. They never reported. They gave false numbers on the report they got back. They didn't report this to the regional folks. Nobody was going to do anything because that's the way the business is done. And this is, unfortunately, what the caller is talking about is that everybody knows it. It's a form of corruption by ignoring it.
Well, we can keep shining a light on it by talking about it. That's our role in all of this.
Yep. Absolutely.
Voters can exercise the ballot box In the meantime, we're running a little short on time. Speaking of business, Fred, a positive business story, one positive story to tell you about today.
Yay.
Google Fiber says it's looking at Jacksonville as one of the next cities to get super high-speed internet and TV service. Google negotiating with City Hall to set up a fiber optic cable infrastructure network around town to provide speeds of up to 1 gigabit per second. That's pretty blazing fast, in other words. John Burr, this is exciting if it does come together. It's not a done deal yet.
Not a done deal, but, you know, as Google has said, for them to get this far in the process with the city, they've never backed out of a deal once they've really identified a city like they have Jacksonville. So it's, you know, it's a huge thing for us, not just for the regular people who want to stream movies in their house, but also for businesses. It's just, you know, and it speaks to the fact that, you know, Jacksonville is gaining a national reputation as a technology center,
David,
which is great.
Yeah, it's very rare for a city to get selected. I don't know if any cities in Rhode Island have gotten it yet.
But, that's the meme of the day.
Well, they're going to have to pay.
One thing to watch.
A little graft here and there, yes.
I think AT&T announced a year ago it was going to bring its gigaspeed to residences in Jacksonville. That never happened, so the point that Google has followed through and done it probably adds a little more assurance to it. And if it happens, it'd be kind of really setting Jacksonville ahead of the curve of a lot of cities.
And Claire, I think it kind of speaks to the fact that we're a tech hub and we're a young city.
Yes, we are. In spite of what people may believe about Jacksonville, we are a young city with a lot of people in the tech industry. I do believe that Comcast is already offering a service that rivals this, but it's extremely expensive.
Yes, and Comcast put out a press release about it yesterday.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, not to be overshadowed by Google. Yes, Comcast has an offering of their own.
I'm sure they're very nervous at this point, though.
But it is expensive, and it's nowhere near as fast as what Google's
That's what about. I'm interested in, because I'm excited about this. I really am, because you know, I'm one of those who has a home office, and this could really be a boon to a lot of folks around if the price is right. But it is going to be some haggling once they actually get here between them and Comcast.
You know, companies in the digital world, what they're looking for is just this type of service. You know, if they're going to come to a city and set up shop, they want to know that something like this Google service exists, because that's just only going to help them even more.
Sure. Well, finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week around the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. And just in time for your trick-or-treating, here it is for you right now, only in Florida, the special Halloween edition, extra scary, just for you. Only in Florida do students find themselves in Halloween weekend hot water after dressing up in blackface. Sadly, an unnamed student at Hilliard High School dressed up this week as pop star Nicki Minaj and posted photos of her look on Instagram. The costume included full blackface as well as a wig and a padded rear end. Mm. After receiving almost immediate backlash, the student removed the shot from her Instagram, but the damage was done. Some took screenshots of it and barraged her with online criticism.
When will they learn?
Many who were offended threatened to contact the school as well as the University of Florida, where this girl has applied for college.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, that's going a little too far, don't you think? The student sent out an apology saying she truly didn't mean to offend. Only in Florida does your bland subdivision descend into the Twilight Zone. Polk County resident Scott Ellis says his family has been terrorized by his new neighbor, Richard Ringer, a retired police officer.
From Rhode Island.
And that the harassment has been like something out of Rod Serling, with Ringer threatening to kill Ellis's dog, setting up video cameras to continually monitor the Ellis family's movements, even complaining about the Ellis family to numerous government agencies. The police affidavit reveals a litany of bizarre behavior, such as pointing bright security lights directly at the Ellis family's windows, causing them to lose sleep. Last week, sheriffs arrested the Ringers on charges of criminal mischief and aggravated stalking, so presumably Halloween night will be a little less spooky in their neighborhood. And finally, only in Florida does Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios turn into an actual horror show for the employees. Police have made two arrests for violent attacks on Universal Orlando team members. Both a scare actor and a stilt walker have been violently assaulted, police say. Orlando media are now reporting other actors are just quitting due to the hostile work environment. So be kind to the zombies if you make the trip down there. They are working for a living. And happy Halloween, everybody.
Indeed.
Happy Halloween.
Thank you, Claire Goforth, John Burr, Fred Matthews, and David Bauerlein. Thank you so much.
Thank
back
you.
In
Go
a
Vikings.
Moment.
Join WJCT on Thursday, November 5 from 6 to 9 p.m. for a screening and discussion of Debt of Honor. This documentary, a moving tribute to the history of disabled veterans, takes an unflinching look at the reality of warfare and disability. After the screening, join us for a panel discussion about what work is being done in Jacksonville to serve our disabled veterans and what's still left to do. The event is free, but registration is required. Log on to wjct.org/events to RSVP.
On the next Fresh Air, Richard Ford talks with us about his fourth novel, about his character Frank Bascom, who is now 68 and dealing with loss, the destruction of Hurricane Sandy, his aging body, and his ex-wife who has Parkinson's and has moved to a nearby assisted living facility.
These are comic stories, by the way, Terry.
I don't
want to get anybody to get
the impression. Am I not bringing
out the
humor? Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through November 30th. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Welcome back. Well, they are a unique cultural jewel in Jacksonville with a 125-year-old history of bringing incredible music to our area. Friday Musicale was formed way back in 1890 in the Monroe Street parlor of the home of Mrs. Claudia Lingle Adams. Mrs. Adams was a highly trained classical musician who wanted to share her passion for music with her friends. Those informal meetings grew into a formal club in 1893. And right up until today, Friday Musicale continues to fulfill its original mission of bringing fine music to the community with free concerts that are open to the public. Board Chair Guts Neubauer joins us now with more about Friday Musicale and the upcoming season. Guts, good to see you.
Thank you for the invitation.
It's so good to have you. And this is such a gem, Friday Musicale, located in Riverside. Free concerts, and let's talk about what's coming up in the season.
Well, next week on Friday at 11 o'clock and at 7:30, we have a jazz concert. In the past, we always had classical music, like it was started by Claudia in 1890. But in order to get a more diversified audience, classical music will still be the significant portion of Friday Musicale, but we have bluegrass and opera, and again next week jazz, to also hopefully get younger audience, more diversified audience.
Right. It's Friday, November 6th, 11 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. with John Lumpkin and the Covenants.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And so as you diversify the music, you keep to the original mission of free concerts, which is just an incredible resource for this community.
Well, it's very difficult because we had a board meeting last week, and we discussed, can we afford free concerts in the future? Because we have significant expenses. We have three buildings. There's maintenance, repairs, and we have to pay the artists. Then the other mission of Friday Musicale is to provide scholarships to talented high school students. They may get $4,000 per year over a four-year period. In any case, we have significant expenses and also a paid staff. So, but we want to continue free concerts, as long as we can. But the big issue, like for all nonprofit companies, is funding. And we have to do a better job to get donations. And the next big event, it's our first event in February, February 6th, from 6:30 to 10. It's we call it Pasta and Puccini. It will be an Italian dining night with dancing and music, music by Puccini, performed by actual musicians. It should be fun.
Yes.
And the ticket price is $75. And if you have time, we open the door for you.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. And for people that aren't aware of Friday Musicale, you really owe it to yourself to stop by and check them out. Now, not only is the music incredible, the venue is incredible. I have had the opportunity to be inside this beautiful building on Oak Street in Riverside, and it really is just a special place.
Well, we have a very nice concert hall, and you probably know the original building burned down in 1995. Police said it was arson, but they never found the arsonist. But the membership came together, and outside donors raised over $500,000. And within a three-year period, the Friday Musicale building was there again. And that's where we are today on 645 Oak Street, around the corner of the Kammer Museum.
That's right. It's right near the Kammer Museum,
yeah.
A beautiful space. And as you said, Guts, not only are the concerts free, not only do you provide scholarships and work with students, not only is the space available for rentals, Pasta and Puccini is coming up in February, and you're putting the call out actually right now to the community to support Friday Musicale.
I mean, again, we have significant costs, but I realize there are so many companies asking for donations, not only in the art world, but in all areas of life. So it's a tough job, but I always say if there are people whose accounts are overflowing, maybe they can make a donation to Friday Musicale.
FridayMusicale.com. Actually, it's Friday Musicale with an E on the end of it, .com. Their season opener is coming up Friday, November 6th with jazz artist John Lumpkin and The Covenant. Two free concerts next Friday. So mark your calendar and go check them out. Board Chair Guts Neubauer here with us. So good to see you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
And we're back in a moment.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
We had even been members at a family nudist camp called the Treehouse Fun Ranch. The Treehouse was kind of like a country club. It had swimming pools and tennis courts. The only difference is that its members were working class and stark naked.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour. True stories told live from the public radio exchange, PRX.org.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Well, finally this hour, if you're in the mood to go traveling this fall, there are some great items up for auction right now, including a couple of tickets for a trip that's a PBS favorite.
Roam if you want to, roam around the world.
and travel expert Judy Wells is here to help us go roaming. And Judy, a Rick Steves trip to Europe, you got my attention right off the bat. You know, I love Rick Steves and his dad jeans. You know, they're famous.
Oh, I do too. I do too. And he's a wonderful speaker if you ever
I love Rick Steves.
He is grand. He's a member, a fellow member of the Society of American Travel Writers.
Yes.
And he has donated a week's Rick Steves tour. Now, he will not necessarily be there, but it will be with one of his favorite guides, whom you've probably seen on a television show. And the tour is for either Rome, Paris, London, or Istanbul.
Get out. What's the value on that?
It's about $6,000.
Oh, that's terrific.
It is terrific. Or you could get a round trip, deluxe accommodations for two, on Canada's famous Via Rail from Toronto to Vancouver, with two stop-offs, one each way.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to stop en
route. Uh-huh.
You can become an honorary duck master at Peabody, Memphis.
Nice.
Really. You can stay for an evening stay, a five-course dinner, breakfast and breakfast for two at Paul Kitching's Michelin-starred 21212 in Edinburgh's Royal Terrace.
So these are top-of-the-line travel
items. Top-of-the-line
trips.
There are those that are also very affordable.
How can we get our hands on these?
The website for the auction is a long one. You can go to my website, wellsworld.net, to get the link, or you can go to satw.org.
But of course, we want to drive people to wellsworld.net.
Yes.
Because you, as you said, are a member of the Society of American Travel Writers, Judy Wells.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now let's be honest, though. Like, say I want to bid on this Rick Steves thing, which I think I may make a bid, because that's a pretty good deal. What are my honest, real chances? Like, how high do you think the bidding's going to go here?
I have never seen it exceed the net value.
Okay.
Normally, it's considerably under. The bidding this year continues until 11:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, November 8th, which means you can buy it and for holiday giving.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good
We've
idea.
Got condos, a three-bedroom condo in Orange Beach, Alabama, or a two-bedroom condo in Destin. There are cookbooks. There are a food writer's tour of New Orleans. Lots of things that you can really afford. 6 to 8 days in the Caribbean on a Carnival cruise, or cruising off the coast of Maine on a Windjammer cruise. These are very reasonable. A week in Tobago, a weekend in Trinidad. You can river raft in West Virginia or South Carolina. Go to a wellness spa in Texas. Go to a rodeo in Amarillo. Hit the Speedway in Indianapolis. Relax in Santa Fe, or get a package that includes a week of stay with air, lodging, rental car, and show passes in Branson, Missouri.
It really runs the gamut. Whatever your taste in travel, you can find something.
You can
on
find
here.
It here, along with suitcases.
Yeah,
and even shoes,
travel
shoes. Books. One thing I will say is, better beware. As in any auction, many of the offerings come with limitations and blackout days, so check that first, read the small print, and then bet away you have as good a chance as anyone
else. As anybody.
Else.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at a stay in Charlottesville, Virginia for the leading bid right now is $20.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So there you go. All right. So that's happening, and that's the big thing in Judy Wells' world right now, which is incredible, because usually you've just come back from some amazing trip.
I have. I've been enjoying the weather in Jacksonville.
How
it's
about
great
that?
To spend some time in my hometown. And next week I head up to Jekyll Island to check out the new Westin Hotel there. It's the only new hotel I know of that's been on the island since the Millionaires, practically.
Exactly.
Also, though, I have found, also on my website, a no-single-supplement safari. You know how you always have to go in twos, or you pay the price of two for one? Two departures, May 5th and August 18th in 2016. This is a great trip. No single supplement. And it's a package, and it goes, I think, for about $3,900.
Wow.
Which is pretty reasonable. Also, if you want to know if you can afford a cruise, there is now a cruise calculator. You can fill in the numbers as you know them, or pick your style of travel, and it will figure out everything from parking to taxes, to the cost of booze for that trip that you're interested in.
Fantastic. And by the way, I just looked up the Rick Steves 7-day European city tour. Mm-hmm. The value, Judy Wells, is $2,000. There are 9 days left to bid. You want to take a guess on what the leading bid is?
I'd say it's probably $800.
You're exactly right.
But the thing is, as with most auctions like this, people bid at the last minute.
Of course. It's like eBay.
But at $800, I'll put in a bid on it.
Heck yeah.
I put on a bid on a couple of things.
I may do the same. So always great to see you. Go to wellsworld.net and get your bids in now. Judy Wells, have a great time up there on Jekyll Island.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers this morning. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast. It's now up on iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, a look at the week's top national news stories. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a safe and happy Halloween weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.